Cedric Muhammad.
So I say there are six speeches that support my view of Barack Obama as the cultural entrepreneur, diasporic personality, slash American emperor. The speech at the Democratic Convention in July 26 of 2004. His speech announcing his candidacy for president February 10, 2007. The speech on race March 18, 2009. Speech to the Muslim world delivered June 4, 2009 from Cairo, Egypt. Speech from Accra, Ghana, July 11, 2009. And the president's speech to the NAACP in New York on July 16, 2009. Now, I would add, if I had heard it, I would have added the UN speech. Oh, by the way, Muammar Gaddafi still speaking. The all-time record, from what I understand, from Al Jazeera, the all-time record for a UN General Assembly speech is 4 hours and 29 minutes. That is currently held by Fidel Castro. Muammar Gaddafi, the great Libyan leader, has a long way to go, but I think he's almost an hour and a half into his speech. Maybe he will get Castro's record. I keep my eyes on the TV screen. Will Muammar Gaddafi still be talking when I'm finishing my show? Let's get the transcript, by the way. Chop that up and study it. There's a lot that he dropped. So let me make this comment and then we'll chop up the Sunday shows. As president, he, Barack Obama, makes everyone uncomfortable because he is uncomfortable operating inside of the confines of narrow ideology and partisanship. Therefore, pragmatism and triangulation, which is where he takes ideas from or executes policies more often favored by his political opponents, are his modus operandi, his strategy and tactics. He throws down the gauntlet and challenges every interest group, lobby, or community, letting them know it is not enough that he likes, agrees, or knows you. To get his full attention, you have to speak the language of power. It is best represented by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, whose history Obama studies carefully, who told the civil rights leader A. Philip Randolph in the 1940s that while he agreed with his agenda, intellectual agreement was not enough for him to change policy. This is the dilemma of the Democratic black. Now, I won't say black Democrats because you are more Democrat than black. So I call you a Democratic black, like an African-American. The Democratic blacks are going to have a problem because not only does Barack Obama jump in and out of cultural identity and personality, he also will disagree with his party. And I'm going to put this out on my blog tomorrow. You'll see the few instances that I give where it's clear that only he, as a beautiful black president, could have done the things that he's done. Not even a white Democrat could have gotten away with it. So what are the Democratic blacks going to do if Obama has to make a certain stance relative to black people or relative to the Democratic Party? I mean, how long will you rationalize or excuse points of disagreement? Okay, I just saw Muammar Gaddafi throw some paper. Okay, let's get to Barack Obama. I guess all I'm saying is we can have our brothers back. We can support them on the basis of color. But please, you're not just fighting Republicans. You're not just fighting evil white supremacists on the right. There's a lot more going on in the air, in the sky, above your head.
This healthcare debate, as you well know, can sometimes be about bigger things. And among your harshest critics is the view somehow that government is out of control. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's gotten very personal. Your election to a lot of people was supposed to mark America somehow moving beyond race.
Right.
And yet this week you had former President Jimmy Carter saying most, not just a little, but most of this Republican opposition against you is motivated by racism. Do you agree with that?
No. Look, I said during the campaign, are there some people who still think through the prism of race when it comes to evaluating me and my candidacy? Absolutely. Sometimes they vote for me for that reason. Sometimes they vote against me for that reason. I'm sure that was true during the campaign. I'm sure that's true now. But I think you actually put your finger on what this argument's really about. And it's an argument that's gone on for the history of this republic. And that is, what's the right role of government? How do we balance freedom with our need to look after one another? I talked about this in the joint session speech. This is not a new argument, and it always invokes passions. It was a passionate argument between Jefferson and Hamilton about this. Andrew Jackson built a whole political party around this notion that somehow there's populist outrage against a federal government that was over intrusive. And so what I think is going on is that we've got a healthy debate taking place. The vast majority of people are conducting it in a very sensible way. I think that every president who's tried to make significant changes along these lines, whether it was FDR or Ronald Reagan, elicit very strong, passionate responses. But I do think that we all have an obligation to try to conduct this conversation in a civil way and to recognize that each of us are patriots, that each of us are Americans, and that, by the way, my proposals, as much as you may not like them, if you're a Republican or on the right, recognize that this is well within the mainstream of what Americans have been talking about for years in terms of making sure that everybody in this country gets decent health care and that people who have health care are protected.
Just to be clear, though, yeah, it wasn't just President Carter. There are others in the Congressional Black Caucus, other thinkers who have said that they agree that there is racism out there in that opposition, too. I just want to be clear. Are you saying to the former president and others, to speak this way is counterproductive?
Well, look, David, here's what I'm saying. I think that the media loves to have a conversation about race. I mean, this is catnip to the media because it is a running thread in American history that's very powerful, and it evokes some very strong emotions. I'm not saying that race never matters in any of these public debates that we have. What I'm saying is this...
Hold on. I think Muammar Gaddafi is done. I don't know if he touched 2 hours, but the great Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi is walking off the stage. I'm watching Al Jazeera coverage. Get the transcript of this speech. I think he covered every subject possible. Back to President Obama. And listen, as you listen to President Obama, what is your deep... I'm not saying fear, but what is it that you don't trust or feel comfortable about when you hear him or see him maneuver? I don't want any partisan ideological stuff. Just save it if you're going to hit me with the Democrat-Republican nonsense. Go tap into your subconscious. What is it really about him that unsettles you, maybe makes you suspicious, or you find it difficult to trust? Now, that's where I want to go with this. Keep going, President.
The debate that's taking place is not about race. It's about people being worried about how our government should operate. Now, I think a lot of those folks on the other side are wrong. I think that they have entirely mischaracterized the nature of our efforts. And I think it's important that we stay focused on solving problems as opposed to plucking out a sentence here or a comment there. And then the entire debate, which should be about how do we make sure middle-class families have secure health care, doesn't get consumed by other things.
Okay, now, some people are saying, well, President Obama doesn't want to acknowledge that race is a factor because he's just doing what he has to do. But what is that really saying if he has to do that? I mean, this is about power. It's not about emotions. A lot of people in politics get faked out sometimes by feelings. President Obama is actually suppressing his feelings in order to achieve a goal. I think that's actually an admirable trait. I absolutely believe his impact is more cultural than political. Let me continue with what the remarks I gave at George Mason University yesterday. I want to give a shout out to all of the college students that were there. It showed me a lot of love, but they had to leave to go back to class. Diverse crowd yesterday. A lot of college students, though. If you would like for me to come to a college, I would love to do so. Love that audience, the young students. As president, he makes everyone uncomfortable because he is uncomfortable, operating inside of the confines of narrow ideology and partisanship. So I go on, I say, I believe that in so many words, President Obama is telling blacks, progressives, and liberals, his base, who may be suspicious of him, that they will have to force him to do what they want. His stance will either expose their current weaknesses to mobilize people or influence the public debate and votes, or it will inspire them to step their game up and be more effective. He can get away with things that no other Democrat can, while he can never rise above a certain level of Republican support because of what he represents. And he represents more than race. This man represents civilizations. For example, his unmistakable effort to go after waste and fraud in social safety net programs like unemployment insurance, Medicaid, and Social Security would never be accepted by a Republican president. And I dare say, even a white Democrat. Yeah, we're chopping up President Obama's speeches and his modus operandi, his MO. Here's a quote from Isabel Sawhill, co-director of the Center on Children and Families at the Brookings Institution. She says back in March, if only a Republican like Richard Nixon could be the first president to go to China, only a Democrat like Mr. Obama could persuade Democrats to cut payments for unemployment and disability. And currently, in the controversy over the governor's race in New York, now this is what I want to say to the Democratic blacks. Not black Democrats, you all are Democratic blacks. How could you excuse President Obama and what he did with Governor Patterson and then not allow other blacks who may be in the Republican Party or Libertarian or Greens to do what they have to do? You allow President Obama a latitude that you really need to extend to your whole community. If black people would treat one another like we're treating President Obama, with patience, tolerance, sophistication, goodwill. Now, what has he really done to deserve that, other than the fact that he won, or he had a chance to win, and then everybody switched over? Don't forget how this all happened. We was divided. Half of you all were going with Hillary. But look at what's happening now. So I say, and currently in the controversy over the governor's race in New York, only Barack Obama, the first black president, could get away with discouraging New York's first black governor from seeking office again. And apparently, yes, we can also means no, you can't. He does all of this while distancing himself from remarks made by former President Jimmy Carter, who says racism is obviously a factor in the opposition of a certain segment of Obama's opponents. Now, listen, this is why young people like Obama. Very young people, particularly in the hip-hop generation industry, they love President Obama not just because he's black. We love him because of how he moves. Smooth operator. Power broker. So I say, amazing. Just when you think you have figured him out and can predict his behavior, he changes. He adjusts. He absorbs resistance, because two things matter to a diasporic personality and cultural entrepreneur. Those two things are, one, getting a deal done in a diverse environment, and two, staying ahead of the curve. He moves like a lawyer and a businessman. He takes the long view. He understands that in the etiquette of business and society, subtlety rules, and things like language, tone, and style are substance. But he's also the American emperor. Let me give you some more audio of the diasporic personality, the cultural entrepreneur in chief. This is from this week, George Stephanopoulos.
Let me ask you about the broader debate around this. And you know, you've seen a lot of your allies look at this whole debate around healthcare and see the issue of race being injected after Joe Wilson's outburst. This week, President Carter, I know you disagree with that race is involved here. And you know, we've talked about this in several interviews about these kind of issues. You always dismiss it. So I'm just wondering, does it frustrate you when your own supporters see racism when you don't think it exists?
Well, look, I think that race is such a volatile issue in this society, always has been, that it becomes hard for people to separate out race being sort of a part of the backdrop of American society.
Let me translate this for you all. Barack Obama is bored. He's bored with black and white. He is waiting for the rest of us and the world to catch up with where he's at. This man stands in between a diaspora, an empire, and a homeland. He's not thinking about left wing, right wing. Are you kidding me? He's bored.
Versus race being a predominant factor in any given debate. And what I've said when we talked about during this, during the campaign, are there some people who don't like me because of my race? I'm sure there are. or there's some people who vote for me only because of my race. There are probably some of those too. The overwhelming part of the American population, I think, is right now following this debate, and they're trying to figure out, is this going to help me? You know, is health care going to make me better off? Now, there's some who, setting aside the issue of race, actually, I think, are more passionate about the idea of whether government can do anything right. And I think that's probably the biggest driver of some of the vitriol right now.
Are you going to raise the taxes?
It goes beyond taxes. I mean, I think that what we're seeing right now is part of a running debate that we saw during FDR, we saw during Ronald Reagan. Anytime there's a president who is proposing big changes that seem to implicate the size of government.
You all don't understand what he's doing. The man cited Ronald Reagan. Now, he's done this before. He's saying that the reaction to him and FDR on the left is the same as that to Ronald Reagan on the right because of the same thing. Big ideas, the question of government. He's right. He's right. Style, tone, and language with Reagan was substance in terms of his electoral success. This man understands. This man's so far ahead in understanding cultural sensibilities and subtleties, that it's dangerous, though, to be that far ahead of your base. Please continue.
That gets everybody's juices flowing, and sometimes you get some pretty noisy debate. But just to finish the thought, I think what I'm proposing is a very modest attempt to make sure that hardworking families out there are going to have the security of health insurance that they can count on. This isn't a radical plan. This isn't grafting a single-payer model onto the United States. It's simply trying to deal with what everybody acknowledges is a big problem. I think that there are some opponents who've seized on this and tried to use this as a proxy for saying that somehow we are vastly expanding government and taking over every sector of the economy. That's what a lot of this debate is about. I think they're wrong. The one thing I hope is that we can have a civil argument about it and that we are able to acknowledge good motives on both sides.
Let me hit it from this way. Not only is President Obama bigger than the boring black-white debate the way it's framed in political media, he's also bigger than his day job. He's like some of you all out there, you hip-hoppreneurs, you corporate thugs, you're at work. You use your job as a beachhead. It's a platform for you to do other things. I don't know that there's another job for President Obama that would really suit him. Maybe UN General Secretary, but even then, that organization, the bureaucracy of it, moves too slow for him. But it gives him an international platform, so he may have to flip that. He's bored, but he's focused. He's a cultural entrepreneur. He wants to get things done. He wants health care done. And he can get it with Democratic votes, but he wants to win in a way that's good for his legacy, the party, and the policy. So he's actually pumped the brakes on things that he could have agreed to that would have gotten this through. This is a teacher of business principles. When you negotiate with people, these are the kind of skills that you need in getting a deal done. These may not be the kind of skills you need to be a good Democrat or a good Republican, but these are the kind of skills that you need to be a good entrepreneur, a successful person in business. Volume 2 of my book deals with the business principles. We touch on Obama throughout all 3 volumes. Please continue, Mr. President.
I was talking to my CBS colleague, Bob Schieffer, this morning, and we were talking about 9/11 and the sense of unity that he felt in the country on that
60
day,
minutes.
And was comparing that to the situation we have now. Mm-hmm. When you were, you were heckled. Not at a town meeting, not on a campaign trail, but in a joint session of Congress.
Actually, in my town meetings, people were extraordinarily courteous. Yeah.
Were you surprised?
Well, Congressman Wilson shouting out during my joint session speech was a surprise not just to me, but I think to a lot of his Republican colleagues, who said that it wasn't appropriate. He apologized afterwards, which I think I appreciated, and I've said so. The truth of the matter is that there has been a coarsening of our political dialogue that I've been running against since I got into politics.
Do you think that Congressman Wilson should be rebuked? There was talk about that today, and now he's claiming that he is a victim, that he's being attacked.
Well, but see, this is part of what happens. I mean, it becomes a big circus. Instead of us focusing on health care.
I think Bob Schieffer's point was that I think he thought that in some ways this debate has brought out the worst in us.
Well,
not the best.
Well, I think you've got a convergence of things. Look, worst recession since the Great Depression. People feeling anxious. I think we're debating something that has always been a source of controversy, and that's not just healthcare, but also the structure and the size and the role of government. That's something that basically defines the left and the right in this country, and so extremes on both sides get very agitated about that issue. I will also say that in the era of 24-hour cable news cycles, that the loudest, shrillest voices get the most attention. And so one of the things that I'm trying to figure out is, you know, how can we make sure that civility is interesting and that hopefully I will be a good model for the fact that, you know, you don't have to yell and holler to make your point and to be passionate about your position.
So your goal to bring civility back to Washington is still a work in progress?
It's still a work in progress, no doubt about it.
Damn, look at that word civility. I'm trying to make a point. There's certain things that young people recognize naturally or just instinctively that people like our age, older, we don't have those kind of sensitivities anymore because we are hardened by ideology. We've been taught what to believe and how to think without understanding why and what's the root of it. Young people and the young college students that I spoke to yesterday that were in attendance at George Mason University, they understand Obama in a very non-ideological way. They see the fact that he's not yelling back at his worst critics. They understand that he's downplaying certain things about his personality in order to get what he wants, a certain goal. So in some respects, some of the attributes that many of us have been attracted to among the gangsters in the neighborhood, I would say maybe some of the drug dealers, the rappers, and the athletes. Well, President Obama is taking that to a higher level. Still the American emperor. Let me read how I close this now, my remarks from yesterday. I say, in closing, President Barack Obama's greatest contribution is cultural, not political. He models behavior and attitudes, particularly in Black America, that had previously been marginalized by the projection of the poorest and the worst kind of behavior by the entertainment industry and culture, such as married life, high academic performance, polish and cultural refinement, and social etiquette. They all do matter after all. He does it all without entirely divorcing himself from a people and the culture that has been most victimized and exploited. He is a role model in chief more than a commander in chief for some. But the question for Barack Obama, diasporic personality and cultural entrepreneur, is what are the costs of representing the American empire? We'll get into that in hour number two. I'm going to chop up the speech of the great Muammar Gaddafi. A speech like no other. I got to get my hands on the speech from Fidel Castro, Comandante, 1960. He holds the record for the longest UN General Assembly speech. I would imagine that Brother Gaddafi may be in second place today. Get the transcript, though. Read what he said. All my Democratic blacks out there, I love you. I vote Democratic quite often. But you're boring. You're boring the president. You're boring to me. This is high stakes right now. You're not going to win bouncing off of CNN and Fox, who have their own WWE-like arrangement. You're not going to win getting upset and getting happy every other week because of what's being reported. High stakes. Take the big picture like Brother Barack. I'm going to publish this tomorrow, God willing. CedricMuhammad.com. I'll make this a blog, or maybe by Friday. I haven't done this in some time. But if you're new to the show, you've never heard this. I dedicate a certain song to Democratic blacks who are in an abusive relationship with that party. It's the hottest show in the diaspora. I'm headed for hour number two. I will let you look at me. I got red, white, and blue and a Kenyan hat on. My three books will be out October 7th. Anyone know the significance of that date? Come on. Oh, I haven't explained this. This is black people singing to the Democratic Party. So the male focus of attention is the Democratic Party. The singer is Black America. You're taking too much time to make up your mind. Baby, you love me, or you don't. No, you're the girl, and you're crazy, making the world. You said you dropped them, but you know you won't. Sometimes I think about forgetting you.
Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
I hate to do this, but what I'm saying is there's no reason that you will ever really have to not be a Democrat. Barack Obama is picking and choosing, dancing and moving, slipping and bobbing, letting you know it's okay to disagree with your party. Please take the hint. You can vote Green Party Libertarian every once in a while. Damn.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program.
It's indescribably beautiful. Love flying over the polar cap, over the desolation, the stars. It's really one of God's good ones. So you think a being of some sort did all this?
You don't?
You mean, do I believe if I look up in the sky and promise this or that, the baby will make all this go away? No.
Then 95% of the people on Earth are wrong.
If life has taught me anything, it's that 95% of the people are always wrong.
It's called faith.
I honestly envy people who have faith. I just can't get my head around it.
Maybe your head's in the way.
Carter, we've all had hundreds of these discussions, and every one of them always hits the same wall. Is there a sugar plum fairy or not? And nobody has ever gotten over that wall.
So, what do you believe?
I resist all of these.
No Big Bang, random universe.
We live, we die, and the wheels on the bus go round and round.
What if you're wrong?
I'd love to be wrong. If I'm wrong, I win.
Not sure it works that way.
You're not claiming you know something I don't.
Mm-mm. I just have faith.
Hallelujah, brother. pass the muster.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.